Hello, I'm Jeff Sykes, and I'd like to take you through the capital gains tax changes that come into force on the 6th of April 2008. What I'd like to do is first just have a brief reminder of the existing CGT system, then move on and have a look at the new regime, then have a look at the entrepreneurs' relief, which has been announced by the Chancellor, and finally have a look at some issues that arise on the changeover from the old regime. The new regime. Let's first just remind ourselves briefly about how the existing capital gains tax regime operates up to the 6th of April 2008. Capital gains tax, of course, applies to gains on most assets which are held long term. The tax is worked out on the difference between the sale proceeds and the base cost. The base cost will be the actual cost, but if the asset was held on 31st of March 1982, it'll be the March 82 value or original cost, whichever is the higher. There are two key allowances which reflect the history of the ownership of the asset, and they are if the asset was held between 1982 and 1998, indexation allowance will be available, and if the asset was held between 1998 and 2008, taper relief will be allowable. Once these allowances have been calculated, the balance of the gain minus the annual exemption is at the rate on which the taxpayer pays tax on the top slice of their income, and that is going to be either 10%, 20%, or 40%. That is all changing, so let's have a look at how the new regime is going to operate. Well, under the new regime, there will be a single 18% rate, irrespective of the income of the taxpayer making the disposal. This 18% rate will apply to all disposals after the 6th of April 2008. It'll apply to individuals, trustees, and personal representatives. It doesn't apply to limited companies. Limited companies carry on exactly as before, with indexation allowance being available and paying at corporation tax rates. So the gains will in future be taxed at 18% after deducting any allowable losses, either in the year or brought forward, any other reliefs that are available, and the annual exemption for the year. Let's have a look at what's been abolished. Taper relief is withdrawn with effect from the 6th of April 2008. Indexation allowance is also withdrawn. There'll be a compulsory rebasing at the 31st of March 1982 value, even where the original cost is higher, so the benefit of getting a higher original cost goes. Another item that's been abolished is halving relief. That is, the relief that was available where a gain was rolled over between 1982 and 1988. Normally, when a gain is rolled over, the amount of the rolled over gain is deducted from the base cost of the asset going forward. But for this particular type of gain, between 1982 and 1988, only half the gain was deducted from the base cost. This relief goes. So the full gain will have to be taken on board when working out the cost. Next, the share identification rules. Under taper relief, there have been complex share identification rules. The general idea being that if you sold shares, you had to treat them as most recently acquired shares, which of course meant that your taper relief was minimized. That's all gone now, and from April 2008, there will be a return to the old pooling system. All shares of a single class in the same company will be treated as a single asset, growing or diminishing as shares are bought or sold. The only exception to the pooling rule will be what might be called two pieces of anti-avoidance legislation. Firstly, the same-day rule. Where shares are bought and sold on the same day, those sales and purchases are matched. Secondly, what is often called the anti-bed and breakfasting rule, which says that where you sell shares and buy them back within 30 days, then the buyback is matched with the sale. That rule will also apply. But once the same day and the 30-day anti-bed and breakfasting rules are allowed for, the other shares bought and sold will simply go into the pool. CGT is changing, but some of the key reliefs will still be available. For example, principal private residence relief will still be available. The relief for rollover on the replacement of business assets will be available. It'll still be possible to defer capital gains, by purchasing EIS or venture capital trust shares, and where gifts of business assets are made, it would still be possible to hold over the gain, to roll over the gain against the base cost of the person receiving those business assets. Let's have a look at an example of the way the new system might work. Let's take something like a holiday home. That is an asset which is purely being used for holiday purposes, not for any business purposes, and therefore would be a non-business asset under the take relief rules. A holiday home bought in 1995 for £100,000. It sold in July 2008 for £250,000. Assuming there are no other gains in the year, and let's assume that the annual exemption is uplifted in line with inflation, and next year it's £9,500, then you will simply take the £50,000 gain, deduct the annual exemption, and on what's left, you'll pay tax at 18%, irrespective of your income level. That gives £25,290 of capital gains tax due. Let's compare it with the situation if it was sold under the old regime in March 2008. In this case, we've got £150,000 gain less 40% take relief on a non-business asset. That gives rise to a £90,000 gain, from which a £9,200 annual exemption is deducted, giving a total capital gains tax liability of just over £32,000. So it's clear in a case like this that the new regime with an 18% rate is much better than the old regime with 40% take relief and then a 40% tax rate. Let me move on to have a look at the abolition of what is often called the kink test. This is the test that says that if an asset is worth more in March 1982, then you take that value. But if it was worth more at its original cost, then you take that value. That rule is going, and you will always start with the March 82 value. Let's have a look at an example where the shares were bought for £500 in 1960. By March 1982, their value has declined to £450. In August 2008, they sold for £25,000. Under the new rules, you simply have to take the £450 March 1982 value. Deduct that from the proceeds. The gain is £24,550. You then pay on £24,550, less the annual exemption. You simply pay on that at 18%. So notice here that the original cost, which is higher than the March 82 value, will be ignored once you get beyond the 6th of April 2008. An important issue regarding the date at which a gain is taxed is the date of the contract. Let's have a look at two possible situations here where we've got shares being sold in November 2007. Let's say we've got a contract entered into in November 2007. This is an unconditional contract, but the actual sale won't happen until March 2008. The gain is taxed in November 2007. That's the date of the unconditional contract. So even though the shares aren't sold till 2008, it's taxed as an 07-08 gain. You can contrast that with a case where the contract is only conditional, and the conditions won't be satisfied until May 2008. Here, the gain is taxed in 08-09. Because the conditions aren't satisfied till 08-09, therefore it's an 08-09 gain. This is obviously an important issue when looking at into which year the gain is going to fall. Let me move on now to have a look at the new entrepreneurs relief that was announced after the original regime change was put into the public domain. The entrepreneurs relief will run from the 6th of April 2008, as the new regime will, and it applies on the sale of either all or part of a business, or business assets following the cessation of business, or shares in a qualifying company. There'll be a lifetime limit of £1 million, and on gains of these three types, up to £1 million in a lifetime, there'll be a reduction of 4/9. What this means, of course, is that if you tax the remaining 5/9 of the gain at 18%, you wind up paying a 10% rate, which is the same as the pre-March 08 effective rate on business assets. Let's look at an example of how that might work. Let's say we've got a trading business sold in June 2008 for £450,000. The way the relief works is to reduce the gain so it becomes £250,000, which is taxable. From the £250,000, we deduct any losses brought forward, any annual exemption, and what's left is taxed at 18%. The entrepreneur's relief is very similar to the old style retirement relief in terms of the rules and regulations that apply to it. The two key differences are that there is no age limit on obtaining it, as there was for retirement relief, and there is now only a 1 year holding period, whereas previously there was a 10 year holding limit for retirement relief. It applies to the sale of a trading business or a furnitory letting business. If you're selling shares in a trading company, then the individual must be an officer or an employee of the company, although no particular amount of time spent is required, just simply an officer or employee, and the individual must own at least 5% of the shares in the company. If it's a trust that's making the sale, then a similar relief is available, where an interest in possession beneficiary is either involved in running a business in a trust asset, for example, the trust owns the hotel or the office, and the beneficiary runs the business, or where the trust owns an asset and it's used by a trading company, or where there's a trading company shares being sold and an interest in possession beneficiary is an officer or employee of the company and the trust owns at least 5%. Subsequent to the announcement of the entrepreneur's relief, draft legislation was published together with some frequently asked questions, and it's worth highlighting a couple of the frequently asked questions which were dealt with. Firstly, what happens about letting of commercial property? The questions highlight the fact that letting commercial property generally will not qualify for entrepreneur's relief. Contrast that with the position where letting commercial property generally has qualified for business asset tape relief. The only time when letting commercial property is likely to apply for to qualify for entrepreneur's relief will be where the commercial property is let to a partnership in which the individual works as a partner, or to a company, which is the individual's trading company, in which he owns 5% of the shares and works. However, just like the old style retirement relief, any rent paid by the partnership or company will reduce the amount of the relief. The second question that's worth highlighting is what happens where you've got a paper-for-paper exchange. Firstly, where a gain is deferred or frozen? A gain might be deferred if you simply make an investment in EIS shares. It might be frozen where you get an exchange for qualifying corporate bonds. If either of those happens, a deferral or a freezing of the gain, then entrepreneur's relief will apply when the gain finally comes out and has to be taxed. And you'll have to look back at the original disposal and say, if there had been entrepreneur's relief at that time, would it have applied? If the answer is yes, you get your entrepreneur's relief. Unfortunately, that won't happen on a straightforward paper-for-paper disposal. For example, shares exchange for shares or shares exchange for non-qualifying corporate bonds. In this case, there is no entrepreneur's relief. The only possible exception to that would be if the shares in NewCo that you've received on paper-for-paper, if they qualify under entrepreneur's relief. That might be, for example, where you receive shares in NewCo and you're working for NewCo and you own more than 5% in NewCo, then they might qualify, but that will be rare. Let's finally move on to one or two items that relate to the changeover to the new regime. Let me now move on to the question of how you can get the benefit of indexation and tape relief before it disappears on the 6th of April 2008. And to do that, you might want to make a sale before the 6th of April 2008. If you're going to do that, it's going to have to be a sale for cash. If you've got a deferred consideration, again, that will have to be a simple amount of cash which is owing if you want to get the benefit of the old style rules. If what you get is shares or loan notes, then that won't work because that'll give a gain after April 2008. Alternatives that you might think about might be a transfer to a settled or interested trust before the 6th of April 2008. That will trigger a gain before that date, and of course the gain will qualify for old style indexation allowance and tape relief. Other things you might need to watch for are the early redemption of qualifying corporate bonds. If you receive qualifying corporate bonds on an earlier disposal, you might want to sell them now while you're still going to get business asset tape relief on them. If you wait until after April 08, you'll get the benefit of the 18% rate all right, but you won't get any tape relief. The other possibility is where you've got some sort of earn-out consideration. What you will often want to do on an earn-out is to elect to defer the tax until the earn-out is actually cashed in. But that might not be desirable now, because by the time the earn-out is cashed in, you might be facing an 18% rate, whereas if you go for it now, you'll get only perhaps a 10% rate and the benefit of indexation allowance. So in many cases, you may want to disapply that earn-out deferral and simply take the hit now at the lower rate. Let's have a look at other disposals. Firstly, what about simply selling shares to a newly formed company for cash to trigger a disposal at this point? Yes, that might work. The cautionary note that's got to be sounded there is the transactions in securities rule. Where a company with lots of undistributed reserves is sold to another company in return for a cash sum, this could trigger the transaction in securities rules. There may be ways of avoiding that, but it's certainly something that has to be treated with caution. What about partnerships? Well, there are ways of triggering a gain in a partnership situation. Firstly, if you get a change in the profit sharing ratio in a partnership, together with an asset revaluation, that in itself triggers off a gain. So it might be worth doing that to trigger a gain to pay the tax now rather than later. Another possibility might be to extract the assets, get the assets out of the partnership into the hands of the partners themselves. They can then think about transferring their share into, say, a trust or whatever it may be. And finally, incorporation of the partnership. Normally, when you incorporate a partnership, you simply roll over the gain. But that may be just what you don't want to do. You may want to take the gain now to get the benefit of the reliefs which will be lost after April 08. Finally, what about inter-spouse transfers? Do these work? Yes, they do. If an asset is sold from one spouse to another, the spouse that takes the asset receives it at the transferor spouse's base cost plus indexation. Therefore, if the original spouse holds it right through till April 08, the indexation will be lost. An inter-spouse transfer will cause the indexation allowance to be banked and available against the future disposal. So yes, it does work. There's one slight problem with it. That is, if the transferor spouse has got an asset that was held pre-82, then the benefit of the uplift from original cost to March 82 value will be lost. So if that's a substantial sacrifice, it might be a good idea not to make that disposal inter-spouse. That brings me to the end of the changeover to the new capital gains tax regime from the 6th of April 2008.